Good morning, everybody. This is the 567th day of the war in Europe. Ready to turn the air over to our newscasters in London, Berlin, and Washington. They'll give you the latest news here and abroad. But first, let's hear from England. Go ahead, London.
This is John McVane in London. For the second night in a row, German bombers last night concentrated their attacks on Plymouth. The attack is described as only a fairly heavy one, but casualties are believed to have been numerous, and much damage was done to public buildings, shops, and houses. Plymouth is a small city and an old one. Some of its houses have been standing since before the day the pilgrims left the little port for America. When I was there late last summer, the town had had only one raid of any importance, and even then the casualties seemed high for the size of the raid. I remember thinking that some of the rickety old buildings offered little protection from bombs. The raids on the last two nights, with thousands of incendiaries and many high explosives, seemed to have caused a lot of damage. Last night, the bombers, reversing their usual procedure, dropped their high explosives first and followed up with the firebombs. Some of the new Royal Air Force heavy bombers took part in the British raid on Lorient, the German submarine base on the French coast, last night. It was the third successive night raid on the base and the 48th the British have made on it. Heavy bombs were dropped, and the attacks were considered among the most intensive the British have ever made on the port. The Ostend docks were also attacked. Public opinion in Britain is becoming dissatisfied with the RAF policy of short, scattered raids on Germany as compared to the long, concentrated raids the Germans are making on British towns. The British civilians are taking a hammering. They'll continue to take it, but they want to know that the British bombers are handing as good as they get to the cities of Germany. One air expert today asked whether, in view of the experience gained over the past few months, the bombing of cities and large residential districts in general may not, in fact, be more damaging to the enemy's war machine than the bombing of specified military targets. The British are beginning to feel that the RAF bombing policy would be improved by greater concentration and a little less regard for the feelings of the German civilians. Those Britishers who survive a night of heavy bombing look at their wrecked houses, think of friends and relatives who have been killed and wounded, are inclined to think that a raid on the Bremerhaven docks or the Ham Railroad yards just isn't hitting back hard enough. There's a feeling among civilians here that if the British were to pace the center of Berlin or knock down the beer houses of Munich, the effect on the German morale might go a long way. Authoritative quarters in London believe that much pressure is being brought to bear by the Germans on the Yugoslavs to secure an agreement that will bring Yugoslavia into general alignment with the Axis. Recent protests by members of the Yugoslav government have produced a crisis and considerable confusion in Belgrade. It's thought in London that the Yugoslav public will strongly protest against any lineup with the Axis. Such a step, it is felt, would result in an explosion of public indignation. The Yugoslav desire for independence is thought to have been strengthened by the action of the Greeks. And the Serbs appreciate how important it is for the political and economic life of Yugoslavia for Salonika to remain in friendly Greek hands. The reported meeting between Prince Paul, Yugoslav regent, and the British minister in Belgrade is unconfirmed in London, but it is known that they have been in contact in the past few days. Information reaching London today indicates that German submarine experts are now in the Japanese-mandated Spratly Islands in the Pacific, constructing a submarine base. German technical experts are said to be supervising the transfer of Japanese troops from central China to the Canton area. London papers today print without comment reports from Washington that the United States Navy may soon be convoying American war supplies to Britain across the Atlantic. Report that 50 merchant ships may be transferred to Britain within a few days is also given a prominent place on the front pages. Yesterday, Britishers learned what had been generally known by correspondence here for some time, that the German battlecruisers Scharnhorst and Gneisenau are raiding in the Atlantic. The British have been hunting for the two cruisers with planes and naval units. The South American story to the effect that the vessels are going to convoy Axis merchant ships from South America to Europe would be a stroke of luck for the British Navy if it were only true. The Navy would like nothing better than to catch the Gneisenau, the Scharnhorst, and the fleet of merchant vessels all together. For a few Axis cargo vessels would be a welcome addition to the British merchant fleet.
The London News Chronicle, Tampanen's Lisbon correspondent, today gives a description of conditions in both occupied and unoccupied France, based on information from what he calls an absolutely reliable informant, just returned from Vichy. The informant reported that Admiral Dollon is now just as dangerous to England as Laval was. He says since becoming vice premier and Pétain's nominated successor, he has allowed personal ambition to overrule all else. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
That was our radio newscaster in London with his report on latest developments. In another few seconds, we shall take you on the other side of the channel to hear about what's going on in the Reich. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. Spring began yesterday with the announcement of a notable successes in the German war on British shipping. The German High Command gave out a report last evening of the sinking of 69,000 tons out of a convoy that was attacked off the west coast of Africa by German submarines. And today the amount is increased to 77,000 tons in a series of attacks that lasted for several days and were renewed over and over again. In all, 11 ships were sunk in the attacks. At the same time comes the news that a German battleship formation in an extensive operation in North Atlantic waters has sunk 22 merchant ships for a total of 116,000 tons and has rescued 800 survivors. The Air Force has not been behind its sister service and reports the destruction of a further 31,000 tons, including a raid on a convoy off Crete in the Mediterranean, in the course of which a 12,000-ton vessel was set on fire and sunk. That makes altogether 224,000 tons of enemy shipping sent to the bottom by the various kinds of German commerce destroyers. And it is notable to see the use of battleships in this service, evidently on a big scale. Other military news concerns the renewed bombing of Plymouth, again on a considerable scale. The British made no attempts to enter German territory last night, but they did lose in all 6 planes, the German High Command states, while the Germans lost 2. News along a diplomatic front is centered today on the changes in the cabinet in Yugoslavia, where 3 ministers, said to be none too German-friendly, and one of them a Freemason, have sent in their resignations. This is evidence of the great strain and stress that has been prevalent under the surface in Yugoslavia right along, caused by the differences of opinion regarding the question of whether the country should openly join the Axis powers, as so many of its neighbors in southeastern Europe have done. The Yugoslavian question is still wide open, and it may be that when Japan's Matsuoka arrives here on Wednesday, he will find a new adherent to the 3-power pact ready to sign up. Hungary's Foreign Minister Bardossi has concluded his visit to Herr von Ribbentrop and the Führer at Munich, and is on his way back after a series of consultations and an exchange of public toasts in which Herr von Ribbentrop stressed the old companionship in arms of Germany and Hungary in the last war and welcomed the country as an ally in the present one. Conscientious objectors are dealt with severely in Germany. A group of men and women belonging to the sect of Bible searchers, affiliated with the Watchtower Society for Bible Research in America, have been tried on charges of interfering with the war, sabotaging air raid protection, and belonging to an anti-military organization. And one of them, 34-year-old Ludwig Siranek, has been sentenced to death. 5 others, including 2 women, have received long prison sentences. The Bible Research sect at one time numbered several million adherents in Germany, but has been prohibited because of its subversive activities and its property confiscated. The famous dining car in which the armistice was signed on November 11, 1918, and in which the French capitulated last June, is to be put on public exhibition tomorrow in the Berlin Lustgarten in connection with the Army Day drive for winter relief. The car was for years on the regular run between Munich and Constantinople, on the Orient Express, and when the last war broke out, it happened to be in Paris. It was part of the special train of Marshal Foch during the armistice negotiations, then was put into the Invalide in Paris, and later removed to Compiègne, where the Germans found it and put it to use once more. Now it is in Berlin, and here, say the Germans, it is going to stay. Mail deliveries in wartime naturally have had to suffer, what with carriers being withdrawn for army service and their places taken by women. And so many people, to ensure prompt delivery of important letters, have taken to sending them by special delivery. This has been done so much, however, that special delivery service in Berlin has been discontinued. It is announced today, and mail will have to take its chances whether important or not. The women letter carriers, streetcar conductors, and such like, many of them trousered, are quite a feature of the street scene here in Berlin, and they do their job efficiently and well, though often under considerable hardships. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
Well, that rounds out reports of latest developments in Europe. And now back home, Earl Godwin gives you his report of events along the Potomac from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. Along the Potomac, we begin to see what all the ballyhoo and plans and production conferences were for. The American miracle of mass production of huge fleets of airplanes, flying ferry boats, and flying fortresses is now all but a fact. The House of Representatives put the final touch on the first phase of airplane production at the rate of nearly 5,000 great planes in a year when it passed that Army appropriation bill of $4 billion yesterday in 4 hours, $1 billion an hour, and a record of $15 billion for defense in 2 weeks. This bill of yesterday was the final, tangible, hard-boiled actuality of the Army needs for this next fiscal year, which starts July 1, 1941. Just why the government bookkeepers insist on starting their year July 1st is one of the amazing red tape mysteries of Washington. Uncle Joe Cannon used to say it was plum laziness. Anyhow, that's the fact. The Army now starts with money to build up the groundwork for a 4-million-man army. It gets the cash for the munitions and support of a 2-million-man army in this July 1st year I'm talking about. It gets all but $1 billion, nearly $1 billion, for new plants and shops and warehouses and tools, which will be the start of mass production, which gets underway in fact and not merely in advance promises. And we learn that we are to have from 12 to 40 flying fortresses per day when all this work gets going in this next 12 months. We learn, too, that the British have said our current flying fortresses, bombers with a range of 5,000 miles on one charge of gas and new hard-hitting guns, are the best in the world, and they've tried some of them out. They've tried them out in actual combat. We hope to send Great Britain 11,000 of these planes in the next 2 years, and that would be in addition to about the same number of planes from here Britain has already ordered. That would be a little more than 22,000 of these fine new planes. The Lend-Lease bill, by the way, is up in the Senate today, which meets on Saturday, unusually, as the effort is made to ram the program through. It would not be surprising if the Senate should pass this $7 billion bill in one session. And incidentally, the Senate's committee takes up that same Army bill that I'm talking to you about, with all its planes and plants, the one that the House finished yesterday. Speed and action are the things going on in this busy national capital just at this time. But 39,000 men are idle in 25 big plants, according to the report this morning. 25 big plants that are turning out essential defense materials, or should be. As the President's Mediation Board starts, Representative Smith of Virginia charges in Congress that this board is powerless to affect anything. And the government, by the way, may take steps today this next week, to force the reopening of that great big Alice Chalmers plant near Milwaukee with its 9,000 men and its $45 million in orders for heavy machinery. That big plant has been closed now since January 22nd by a strike. There are even hints that the Army and Navy may consider taking over the plant, and according to lawyers here, there are at least two ways under existing laws by which the government might step in and operate the plant. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
For the latest news, listen to NBC. We invite you to keep your radio tuned to this station. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.